So during the worship, there were some questions that came out. Who feels broken? Who needs healing? Who needs change? And I don't know who all put up their hands, but when it comes to human beings, there's always something that is broken, whether it feels broken or not, I guess. Some people find out they're broken. Some people know they're broken. People need healing and people need change. And the world is full of people that promise it. You ever notice that? Commercials about it. There are some things you can put on your skin that will change your whole life and give you immortality, right? I don't know if they quite claim that. But little bottles of things that are supposed to make you young forever, I guess. And then there are people that claim that they've come up with a way of making everything wonderful. And if you just come and follow them and usually give them a lot of your money, they'll heal you, they'll make you better, they'll show you the way. You make the payments, and then there are politicians always promise change, don't they? Change from one thing to another. And the history of politics has shown that the results of political endeavors are that the world is transformed into a new and wonderful place, right? I think the answer, not the way the question was meant, but who needs healing? I want to invite you to open up your eyes and look across the road and look in the next house and then look at the house the other direction and then go for a walk and look where you see and ask the Lord to show you who needs healing. And what will begin to happen is that you will have this experience of noticing that there are people every place that need healing. And the Lord has brought you into that which heals humanity of its wounds, and He's sent you to wounded people that need healing. And I've always found it much easier not to take myself too seriously when I'm aware and engaged with actual living human beings that are in desperate need. A lot of things that just seem to fade away when that really comes into view. Like anything from fixing the car to even just something I wanted to do. Sometimes that just vanishes. My sensation of the weather, which I'm a weather wimp in some ways. I don't like nice, sunny, warm summer much. It's just, I like cold and snow. I like blizzards, and I like to be able to do things to stay warmer rather than to strip everything off and still be too hot. So I'm a wimp, you know. I mean, give me more difficult weather, I'm often more comfortable in it. We all have our proclivities, right? But I have found I can get cold, by the way. And I hate being cold. I really hate being cold. But I've had times where I met somebody and was talking to them, somebody that had a need, and I forgot, I didn't notice I was getting cold. I got colder and colder. And I was just paying attention to what was in front of me. And in some way, it didn't seem to matter anymore. So in this week's Torah portion, I love this one part in Deuteronomy 11. where the Lord tells Moses to speak to the sons of Israel, the sons and the daughters, the toddlers and the everybody, including everybody that wasn't technically an Israelite, because there were a whole bunch of them with them. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, which I am commanding you today. And the curse, if you do not listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I am commanding you today by following other gods which you have not known. The emphasis there is on idolatry, not just failure to perform every commandment. And failure to perform this or that commandment, well, it's a problem, but there's provision for it. People do it unwittingly. People do it in ignorance. It doesn't make it fine, but it's not really the key thing. There are all kinds of bumps and scrapes in the course of a relationship, and that's true of our relationship with our perfect, loving, righteous, and infallible God. So thing is, He's made provision, He knows what we need, and all of those bumps and scrapes, all of those offenses, they can all be dealt with, healed, and the relationship of love and the romance that God wants with His people, including you, can continue. It doesn't continue when we dig our heels in and we insist on something. And that's the point at which, in some way, we begin to follow another God. It doesn't have to have a name. I mean, like a personal name. It doesn't have to be identified as a being. It could be just about anything. But none of those things, none of those idols, none of those spiritual forces, nothing in all of creation was meant to be God to anything or anyone other than God. You notice that the scriptures never talk about the trees and all the beasts of the field and the creatures in the sea praising any other God. You ever notice that? It does talk about all of creation praising God, but men and women are the only things that are ever referred to as worshiping something else. So the Lord is setting before them blessing and curse, and he's basically telling them that there's blessing. They can have blessing. He shows them the way of blessing. He wants them to choose blessing. Later on in the book, it talks about choosing life. But when a blessing and a curse is placed before you, I don't know, what do you do, play eeny, meeny, miny, mo? I wish I hadn't said that. But it's a, you draw lots, how do you decide? I mean, it's such a difficult decision when you're choosing between being cursed and being blessed, isn't it? Right? We don't always know what we're choosing, but the Lord tells us what to choose. He gives us many things to choose from. He asks us to choose what's blessed, and He blessed everything from the beginning. I'm just going to jump forward to the 16th chapter, where in verse 9 it says, "You shall count 7 weeks for yourself This kind of thing is repeated in more than one spot, but this is one of them. This you should begin to count 7 weeks from the time you begin the sickle, put the sickle to the standing grain. Then you shall celebrate the Feast of Weeks. And my point here isn't really about the Feast of Weeks, but about the way things are conducted. The Lord your God, then you shall celebrate the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with a tribute of a freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give just as the Lord your God blesses you. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter and your male and female servants and the Levite who is in your town and the stranger and the orphan and the widow. So when Israel chooses blessing instead of curse, God provides, and out of what God provides, there's provision for who? Everybody. Everybody. You, your children, those who work for you in some way, strangers, orphans, and widows. There isn't anybody. There's nobody left out. Nobody's left out. You ever notice any strangers? I tried a very old-fashioned thing yesterday. I went and knocked on a door. Actually, the person that came to the door said, I thought to myself, who knocks on a door? And what the person meant was, nobody comes knocking on the door here, except if it's FedEx or UPS. Nobody knocks on the door. A little conversation about people not knowing other people, and like nobody coming to say, well. But I went and knocked on the door, and lo and behold, there was a stranger on the other side. Actually already knew it would be a stranger. What is a stranger?
A friend you haven't met yet.
A friend you haven't met yet. It could mean in the context of a community or a country, somebody that's from someplace else. And so you don't know them. But the will of God was that when he chose Israel, and his desire was, and he did, choose many other people using Israel to do the inviting and the revealing. He chose to seek out strangers and draw them in. And I'm not sure how long a stranger can remain a stranger when they are invited in and prepared, provided for, along with the orphans and the widows. And what I see here is a picture of if God's people do what's right, then justice is done with respect to everybody. Nobody's left out. Everyone's provided for. And all people are brought into rejoicing before the Lord. And in many places, the Lord talks about them rejoicing, and he in some places, he commands that they rejoice. And he provides everything that's needed to rejoice. Can you imagine somebody, I don't know, I mean, like at times God requires a party, a big celebration. But he pays for all of the, he pays for everything. He supplies the food, he supplies the love, and he supplies the meaning of the occasion, he supplies everything. And out of that, what's meant to happen is there is supposed to be no one that's without, nobody left outside. And I'm noticing, I don't know, has anyone noticed that there are a lot of people that are in a lot of fear? Apparently the, how to describe it, I'm trying to think of a brochure. The city of Kingston, as you know, is famous. Everyone in the world wants to live in the city of Kingston, right? I mean, like, you could go to the Midwest and people say, I'm hoping to make enough money that I can move to Kingston, New York. Right? Well, apparently, I mean, some of you are laughing. I don't know how many people actually want to move to Kingston, but right now there are a lot more people want to move to Kingston than apparently ever. And I can't remember what it was you told me yesterday. A lot of people want to move to Kingston. And the biggest reason, I think, is because those people want to get away from someplace else. Because they're afraid of something. And they want to distance themselves from what seems to be the most likely place to run into the fear. I'm not criticizing them. I mean, there are reasons to get out of town sometimes. Even in the scriptures, there are instructions about, you know, getting out of town. I'm not criticizing that, but so if people being afraid causes people to move, they might move in near you. And if they're afraid, they need something. And that is called an opportunity to get to know somebody, a stranger, and just care. Because you do, not because you're trying to, because you do, because the love of God has been shed abroad in our hearts. So you notice a stranger and, oh, some of them are afraid, and oh, they have needs, and they don't have peace, and you have what they need. So this situation that our country and the world is in, whatever you think the situation is an opportunity, because God causes all things to work together for the good. He doesn't make all things good. He doesn't say all things are good. He doesn't even say all people are good people. But he does. This is the way he does things. He causes everything, all things, to work together for the good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So there are things that I don't want to happen. There are things that I would like to stay away from. There are things, situations that I would rather not be in. But sometimes I'm in those situations. I find myself in those situations. And so at that point, I can get upset. I can complain. I can blame the government. I can talk about whoever is trying to pull off such and such. I could focus on everything that's wrong, and I could just, you know, try to list everything that's wrong. Try it sometimes. Tell me how edifying it is. Send me a postcard. No, call me up. Tell me how edifying it is ever to just list everything that's wrong and dwell on it. And just, you know, you don't want to forget anything that's wrong, because it's really important that things are wrong. So talk about it, memorize it, emphasize it, right? So that you really get it into your bloodstream, so that you don't lose awareness of how bad things are, right? Because it's really important to dwell on how bad things are and how limited you are and how hobbled and downtrodden you might be and how dangerous whatever it is coming is, right? Because that's called being informed, right? Don't confuse this with I'm saying you shouldn't know anything about anything. It's really about the response to the thing or the things, right? And we're in a battle, and the battle is in the mind. And I think I talked about, I think a few weeks ago, I told everybody, have you noticed you're in the middle of a mind field? So be careful where you step, because you might have thoughts in your heads that are going to blow you up when you step on them. Or maybe you'll hear that click, and then realize, oh man, I stepped on that thought. Now, how do I get my foot off without being blown up? Because our heads are mind fields. You ever notice? You ever notice the most dangerous things there are to you are in your head? But those minds can be diffused. And you can, I was about to say, you can get out of your mind alive. I'm not exactly sure if that works that way. Your mind could kill you, but it doesn't have to. It's the way you see what there is to see, and the way you see the unseen that determines, well, it determines whether or not you're going to be able to take the opportunity in front of you. It determines how you experience the difficult things that come along. Sometimes it even determines that the difficult thing didn't even turn out to be difficult, because the difficulty was in your mind. Have you ever had that happen? A little change in attitude, and all of a sudden what you're experiencing was a completely different experience? Have you ever had that happen? The mind is a very powerful thing. And really, the Lord is always asking Israel to have a certain mind, to listen to Him, to believe Him, to love and cling to Him, and to love each other, and to trust that He has what's needed for the situation. And so it could be that the very, very troubling things that you notice might be because God's planning something, and He wants you to see it the way He sees it. He wants you to have the mind of Messiah, and He wants you to act redemptively, and He wants you to have hope and courage. Because, well, it's all in His hands, and your safety is in His hands. You're in His hands. If we really believe what we believe, what weapon formed against us can prosper? What can hurt you? And so if we're looking for what God is seeking to do in the midst of things that don't seem so wonderful, that we would rather not be part of, or that we wish we were out of, then all of a sudden we begin to experience what Psalm 23 is about. And just imagine what your enemies think and feel when they see you sit down, peacefully dining with God, without any concern about them and their powers. Because it says He sets a table before us in the presence of our enemies. Why does He do that? Well, He does it for our good, because He's going to provide for us. But He's also sending a message to our enemies. Right? Why would He bother? It could just be that some of those enemies are going to become friends. It could just be that those enemies might sit down at the table and dine with us, because Yeshua in us, the hope of glory, spills out onto them. The truth of God's love for humanity comes to them because of you. It could just be that maybe there's no limit at that table. Maybe there's limit. Maybe the limit is you just keep pouring. Every empty vessel that comes along, you just keep pouring. And maybe the limit is just when there aren't any more vessels and you find that table could just spread and cover the whole county, the whole globe. You know, I do believe, I've said it many times, I don't believe in one world government, but I do believe in one world government. The God that made heaven and earth, and his Son, who's been given all authority in heaven and earth, is going to govern. I believe in a one world government. I believe in the end of the USA and the coming of something much better called the Kingdom of God. Because there's going to be a day where, I mean, all the peoples will be represented. It's not that everything will be obliterated, but there won't be a need for all of these, all the politicking and all the jet fighters and all of the bombs that represent the threat of annihilation if somebody does certain things. There won't be any need for it, and they won't be there anymore. There'll just be one government, and it will be the one that made it all in his love and kindness, who spoke blessing on it from the beginning, bringing nothing but blessing back to it, a new creation, a new heavens and a new earth, in which renewed and restored human beings relate to each other and relate to God without fear, without greed, without suspicion, shame, malice, stain. Everything will be changed. Yeshua came to reveal the love of the Father and to give himself in the place of humanity, so that all these broken, needy people who need healing, who want change, can be healed and set right and transformed. And I'm going to read you something from the third chapter of Colossians. You know, when I was a kid, I was never afraid of being blown up by a nuclear bomb. We talked about it. I hear about all the fear that we grew up with, my generation. I don't recall ever being afraid of that. I did think that stuff about hiding under the desk seemed strange, but I don't know if I even realized that it wouldn't even change anything, you know, really hiding under the desk. But I didn't worry about it. I didn't really think much about it. But I do have recollections of times where I had fear of being taken over by the Chinese or the Russians. I didn't have it all the time, but, you know, I'd hear things. And it was probably a lot later, but I heard that optimists were learning Russian and pessimists were learning Chinese. And then apparently all the optimists were assuming that we'd be taken over by at least one of them. And they were hoping that we'd be one over the other. And of course, if you'd already learned Russian, that would probably help. And it's probably easier to learn than Chinese. At any rate, if you've been taken over by Messiah, then not that none of this stuff matters at all, but it changes it all. it changes. It changes the way you experience what you're experiencing, even in the most horrible places. Therefore, if you've been raised up with Messiah, keep seeking the things above where Messiah is, where Messiah is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above. Set your mind on the things above. The things having to do with righteousness, the things having to do with God and His majesty and His glory. I'm expanding it. I'm exploding it here. Set your mind on the things that are of God, from God, about His glory and power, about His truth, His redemption, salvation, healing, cleansing, power, enabling. Set your mind on things above. Don't set your mind on the things that are of the earth, on the earth, all of the stuff, all of the dangers, all of the plans of men, all the stuff that's going on that can mess with your head and scare you. Don't set your mind on those things. Set your mind on the things above. You know, this is completely true all the time, even when there doesn't seem to be any particular big threat of anything going on. It's still the same, because there's always plenty of trouble for every day. There's always plenty of earthly things to set your mind on. It's always true. But in certain times, people have more trouble. And they get more concerned, as though God's power is less when they're more disturbed. As though God is smaller when, oh, now there's a real enemy we can see, or there's one we can't see, but we know they're coming. It doesn't change. Things don't change in God's economy when what we see changes. It's always the same. He's always in charge. His truth is always the truth, and His power is always there for those that will walk in it. But where you set your mind matters. So set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Messiah and God. When Messiah, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with Him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead. To you, consider your mind a member of your body. It's funny, I never really actually thought about that before. I always kind of think of it as not exactly part of the body. But I will tell you one thing I know for sure, that what your body does is determined by your mind. When you do stupid things, when you do dangerous things, when you do things that hurt you, when you do things that hurt other people, whether it's with your mouth or your fists or just doing nothing, because that can hurt people too, it's all coming from your mind. Your mind tells the body what to do. And this is a very bitter pill for some people, maybe even for me. But it's a great quote from Danny Silk. You have the power to tell yourself what to do and obey you. See, because the Lord has redeemed us, hasn't He? He's enabled us to obey Him, hasn't He? Not just with some things, not just sinning in these ways until finally we die and go to glory, but He's actually given us the power to do what's right, to change that thing that stayed the same for so long. He's actually given us the power to do it. He has given us the power. He asks us to obey Him. He tells us a bunch of things to do. We know quite a few of them. We're very conscious of a number of them most of the time. And He's given us the power to obey Him. which involves the power to tell ourselves what to do and then obey us. Obey what we tell ourselves, because we got it from God and now we're instructing our own person to do it. But see, if you actually have that power, then that means you're responsible. That's the rub. I've noticed things in me that haven't changed, and I discovered it didn't change because I haven't changed them. Ouch! That hurts. I want somebody else to blame. I know, I'll pray the Lord provides someone else to blame. After all, He is the giver of every good gift, and He certainly wants to give me someone to blame so that I'm not responsible anymore, right? Ha. Talk about a minefield. This is the way our heads work. For you have died and your life is hidden with Messiah and God. When Messiah, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with Him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Put anger aside. If it gets far enough to the side, and it won't be anywhere near you anymore. It doesn't mean I'll take a side of anger with balsamic. It's like, put it away. Get rid of it. Put it aside. Put them aside, all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and free man, but Messiah is all and in all. That's quite a renewal, where there's no difference between the circumcised and the uncircumcised, between the barbarian, the Scythian. Look up those words, you'll learn a few things. No difference, no distinction between barbarians and Scythians, slaves and freemen, but Messiah is all and in all. There's an indwelling that makes everybody part of one family, where everyone's provided for, and everybody rejoices and celebrates what God has done together, with nobody looking at what anybody else has and wishing it was theirs. That's freedom. That is the definition of freedom, is to have your heart and mind filled with love and truth, so that God is enough. I feel like I blasphemed calling God enough. Everything. Life. Hope. Peace. Healing. The restoration of the world. Everything. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, that's you, put on a heart of compassion. Apparently, it's not always automatic. apparently we've been given the power, so then we can use it to put it on. To insist on that instead of what might come to us naturally. That must be like, you know, getting your sleeve into your arm into one of the sleeves, and then, you know, if you're a little stiff, sometimes it's hard to get it around and get your arm through the other sleeve, but, you know, there's grace there to put on the new thing. And I don't know if it has buttons or a zipper, but when you finally get it on, and, you know, you probably feel good, and then you fasten it up the way it's supposed to be, and wow, things are different. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, oh man, it says anyone. There's no, doesn't seem to be any stipulation or clause of exception. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, you also, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Let the peace of Messiah rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. One body made up of those that were barbarians, Scythians, Greeks, Jews, Norwegians, Swedes, Dominicans, French, Germans, Swahili, all sorts of Arabs, Bushmen, everybody. Indeed, you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Messiah richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name. Whatever you're going to do, before you do it, figure out whether it's something you can do in the name of the Lord Yeshua, giving thanks through him to God the Father. I think there are quite a few million people in this country that name the name of Messiah, that may need a revelation and then maybe a greater one of just exactly who it is they're supposed to have love for. And there are people, and some of them us, who need to prepare ourselves to love people that we have no idea how to love. People that we have no understanding of how to deal with in an understanding and loving way. People where we have thoughts or have had thoughts about them that would actually make us act in a way other than what we should. And I think it's time to ask the Lord to help us break up the unplowed ground in our own minds and get things softened up so that we can receive from him just how to reach out and touch the wounded without wounding them more, so that they can be healed. He would give us the tongue of disciples that we could heal the weary with the word. So please try to, don't try. I don't want to quote Yoda, but he did say, no try, only do. everything has some truth in it. The counterfeits all stole the true parts from God. Oh Lord, help us, fill us with your love. Help us to love each other and encourage each other. Help us to be victorious in our own minefield, Lord, that you would go through there with us and dig out all the mines. And that we truly would have the mind of Messiah. Pour your blessing on everyone here today and anyone that's listening. Convince them of your love and pour it on them. And we just give you glory, Lord. We thank you for loving us, for redeeming us, for giving us life. Hallelujah. Ki varechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panavelecha v'echunecha Yisa Adonai panavelecha V'yasem lecha Shalom. May the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his countenance to shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace.